You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All right, good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842 or 855-75-CIVIC. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
Well, I braved the cold this morning. I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, man, it's that time of the year. But we want to get right at it. We got another great show lined up for you this morning. I'm always thrilled to have my good friend Robert Miranda of Flack in the studio. We're joined as well by Paul Swartz. He is the lead organizer for the campaign for Lead Water. And this is a continuation of a show that we began last Wednesday. And it was so interesting that I asked them if they would be willing to, so much information that needs to be disseminated, that if they would come on and we would continue to do this until people really understand the magnitude of what the problem is with their drinking water. Good morning to you, Robert. How you doing, man?
Good morning, Earl, and good morning to all your listening audience there. Thank you once again for hosting this.
Good morning to you, Mr. Swartz. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great and really appreciate you and your audience and the chance to have a chat with folks about this important issue.
So Robert, I want to, before we get into all the things we're going to get into, for sake of clarity, last week we talked a lot about the city of Milwaukee and the lead pipe issue and removing the lead pipes in the city of Milwaukee.
Right.
Is this just a Milwaukee issue? Is this just a urban issue? Is this just a Wisconsin issue?
Oh, no. This is not just a Milwaukee issue. It's certainly not just a Wisconsin issue. It's a real national issue. It's a real human issue. We are all, as human beings, impacted and affected by the tainted water that is being ingested by all of us. We all have a very serious need for looking into this matter, no matter where we live, who we are, where we come from. It affects us in the cities. It affects us in the rural communities. This is about making sure that water, in its best form, water is life. It's got to be to the point where we could get water to our children and to our families in the cleanest form possible.
Hey, Robert. Excuse me, Paul. We're a nation that spends billions of dollars all over the world making sure that people get water. How can it be that we can be so cognizant of the importance of water around the globe, but the American people right here, we're not as concerned?
You know, I think that's a great question. There's a story that we tell ourselves that because we're not a so-called third world country and that water comes to almost every home, potable water comes to almost every home, that it's safe. And that if it weren't safe, the government would tell us. And we do have a law that was passed in 1974 called the Safe Drinking Water Act, which lays out a whole regulatory scheme under the US EPA. That is supposed to guarantee that we have safe drinking water at the tap. The problem is that you can have really good laws, or you can have laws that are flawed in certain ways, but if there isn't really clear transparency and accountability of our agencies at the federal and state and local levels, of our water utilities, about what's actually coming out of the tap and getting into our bodies through the food we eat, that it's, and the water that we drink, the formula that we feed to our babies, then people are sort of left on their own without the information they need to understand what the deficiencies of those laws are and what the public health effects are. And there's lots of contaminants that have really tough names to pronounce that people don't really understand. I call those all collectively methyl ethyl bad stuff. But, you know, lead is something, and it's the reason why we're focused in on it, that we've known since Roman and Greek times, over 2,000 years ago, just doesn't mix with water without negative outcomes. We've learned a lot about the science of that over the last 2,000 years, and how, when lead is mixed with water, how it makes its way into the water and what it does in the body. We just haven't done a very good job of sharing that. And we haven't done a good job of figuring out how we can protect our communities better. And I hope in this show, we can talk about ways, you know, have some hope here and talk about ways people can protect themselves despite the bad messaging from our public health agencies and from US EPA and from our water authorities. And because the media in general sort of trust those authorities, they just sort of amplify without being critical the bad messaging that's going out to our communities.
Well, that's so the whole
show is really important to get the 911 on what's going on.
Well, that's the whole purpose of it, and that's why we're going to repeat it again and again and again until people understand the magnitude of what it is we're talking about. Robert, you, in keeping with what was just said by Paul, educating people, let's begin there.
Yeah, that's very important because over the last few years, the campaign for lead-free water has been deeply involved in the issue of public education and messaging and changing the lead-copper rule, which is part of the Safe Water Act, as Paul mentioned. And so the issue here for us over the last few years is, yeah, we not only want to remove these toxic devices from the water systems that are distributing water, but we also want to, during this whole process, make sure that the public is being informed properly and given the right information on how to protect themselves from the contamination that's going to ensue from the removal of these lead pipes. You know, I put it akin to something like asbestos removal, right?
Right.
You know, all of the stuff that goes into the workers protecting themselves, sealing up the house, everything that needs to be done to remove asbestos.
Right.
Well, we should have something similar to inform the public on what it has to do to protect itself from the release of lead into the water during this whole process of lead pipe removal. And the language and the information is woefully inadequate right now to provide to the public the kind of information they need to protect their family's health.
You know, Robert, I've been listening to you talking about this for a number of years, and I remember you saying that when they were replacing the pipes in the street, when they redo the street, mm-hmm. the lead pipes, the pounding that goes on when they're redoing city streets and those kinds of things, it loosens the flakes
right.
of the lead that is kind of gathered itself. And this is where a lot of the real danger lies. Once they're doing that, they free up that lead
that's a lot of the flakes,
the legions of it,
into the water.
Yeah, exactly. They wind up coming now even more so into right. your home.
Yeah, the particulate matter that goes into the water is even much more of a concern than the soluble form of lead, the kind of lead that's in the water when they tell you to run the water. And we like, Paul and I were talking about this, and there are seven different types of recommendations that the EPA has put out there to give you some information on how to protect yourself. And today we're going to talk about three of them. But the recommendations they make, yeah, they're to a certain extent helpful, but they don't give you enough information on what you need to do to make sure that those recommendations are not only followed through, but are very effective in protecting your families.
Paul, where are the PSAs on this? Why are there not PSAs warning the American people?
You know, there are millions of dollars being spent on PSAs and messaging about lead and water now around the country. Unfortunately, and you know, and with all the lead service line removal or lateral removal dollars that are flowing from the federal government to Wisconsin and to other states around the country, there's an acceleration, unfortunately, of faulty and bad information. And so today we're going to deconstruct, we're going to unpack and pull apart just a few of those bad pieces of information and say what the solution is. So that's a problem, and we're hoping that we can, with your audience, start this this crusade, this public education campaign to get out the right information and let people know what they can do.
So I was at an event last night with United States Senator Tammy Baldwin, and Tammy Baldwin, the senator, started talking about lead pipe removal.
Right.
So this thing has come a long way.
Yes.
There was a time when that would have never been mentioned.
Yep. We did not talk about lead water or lead pipes in Wisconsin or in Milwaukee until we started this movement back in 2015.
That is absolutely correct. 855-752-4842. I'm joined by Paul Swartz. He is the co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and none other than Robert Miranda, you know, always making good trouble with Flat, Fresh Water for Life. You can join us again, 855-752-4842. Your questions are certainly warranted. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Right. All right, welcome back. to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. Once again, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Swartz. He's a co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water and none other than Robert Miranda, who is with FLAC. And so, you know, we've got a lot to cover, but we got some folk on the phone lines. Can we take the phone calls first, Paul, and then Robert? Is that all right?
That's fine.
You got?
Yeah.
All right, Mary from Wauwatosa. Good morning to you, Mary. Thank you very much. It's always good to hear from you.
Good morning, Earl and guests, and thanks for focus on this important subject. I distill my water in my apartment, and with a countertop distiller, and I've always hoped that that was, you know, provides me with safe drinking water. I'd like to know what your knowledge of the Environmental Working Group and its, you know, focus on, you know, the country's water, and what's your opinion of the work that they're doing? Are they of help to us? I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Great questions as always, Mary. Paul?
Yeah. Thank you, Mary. And I just wanted to note that my partner grew up in Wauwatosa and went to Wauwatosa East High School. So I've visited your town many times. Thank you for that question. At first, I think, you know, having technology available to reduce or eliminate the variety of water contaminants that are in our drinking water, out of our taps in our homes, is really important to get knowledgeable, and not all systems of filtration, distillation, others are equal. And that's, you know, part of the puzzle to figure out. As far as the Environmental Working Group, it's one of many environmental non-governmental organizations at the national level that have focused on safe drinking water over time. And a lot of their information is, you know, really important and pretty good. I think what we really want people to know is that there's an important difference between being in Washington in a sort of policy bubble in D.C., writing laws and talking about those, and being on the ground and looking at how people are getting information, what information people have about what's going on with their health, and how we can bridge that gap to make sure that people have the right information to get protected. EWG does, you know, some Environmental Working Group does some really important public education. We think this marriage between what's happening here in DC and with people like Robert in Wisconsin and in Milwaukee is really important to bridge that gap in the local politics that are going on and in how institutions like Milwaukee Water Works and their other water utilities across Wisconsin are actually doing their job.
Robert.
Yep. And again, it's a matter of deciphering and distributing that information effectively to many of the people who really don't pay attention to a lot of this. And so the organization does do great work, but it's really the community frontline groups in all the communities who are dedicated and are in the trenches who are going to be the lead on this matter to make sure that the information is provided to the families who are not necessarily paying attention to what's going on here. Because it's important that they get that information, because once they get that information, then that goes word of mouth throughout the community. And that's why it's important.
You know, we've got to take a short break. So, Mike, hang on the phone lines. And for those of you who may just be joining us, we're joined by Paul Swartz. He is, again, co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and Robert Miranda, FLAC. And if you don't know by now, we're going to do this every Wednesday at about this time until people really understand the magnitude and inherent dangers of the water that you're drinking every day. You know, in the wealthiest, most advanced nation on earth, the fact that we're dealing with this is really just unacceptable. So hang on.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. My guest is Paul Swartz. He is the co-founder Campaign for Lead-Free Water and Robert Miranda of FLAC. And we're talking about leaded water and the inherent dangers and what you can do to protect yourself and your family. We're going to take Mike and then we're going to talk about those seven different suggestions by the EPA. Go ahead, Mike.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And Robert, thanks for being a guest this morning. This is such an underserved topic that I applaud the attention that you guys have given this morning.
Thank you.
Clean air and clean water. Those are the two things all people and all animals consume the most of.
Right.
And it affects everybody. Obviously, what comes in, has an effect on your body. I got a couple quick questions real quick for you, mm-hmm. Your guest. Has anyone monetized the financial harm that lead has caused to the public? Has there been a number attached to any of the studies?
Paul, do you hear that?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and we just had a meeting with an office of the executive in D.C. called the Office of Management and Budget, which reviews all major EPA and other federal government rules and asks questions like that. What are the costs of lead in water on the public, and what are the benefits for more effectively regulating lead coming out of the tap? And there was a really important study by two folks out of Harvard that looked at that question. And what they said is that EPA's approach in the past, under earlier versions of the rule called the lead and copper rule, which has just been amended essentially, and a new rule has been finalized this October, which we're still analyzing because it's 890 pages long, showed that it really undervalued the costs of the health harms, and that it didn't show the huge benefits financially of dealing with this. You know, lead in water affects all the organs in the body, and it can lead to fetal death increases, like spontaneous abortions and stillborn births, miscarriages. It's complicit in smaller problems like increases in attention deficit disorder or hyperactivity disorder, which can create all sorts of problems for learning. It diminishes the IQ. It stops the frontal lobe from coming in and allowing maturity to happen in our population. For older folks like me, it's complicit in all sorts of problems with the vascular and cardiological system, hearing loss, things like that. So just tremendous, tremendous losses financially. And effectively regulating it, and especially educating people about what the problems are of it and getting the lead out, and then letting people know how they can reduce their exposure, has shown to have great benefits. If people would like to see that study, we'd be happy to send it to the Earl Ingram Show and have them post it on the website along with other studies. Or you can go to the campaignforleadfreewater.org. That's campaignforleadfreewater, all spelled out, no spaces, .org. And the underlying science and economics of effective regulation of lead and water is spelled out there along with many other things.
I think it's a great idea. We'll make sure that we put that on the website. Mike, the other question quickly.
Yeah, real quick. My research shows that there's 50,000 public water systems across our great country. 95% of the public is served through these 50,000 independent water treatment facilities. So what I'm concerned about is this. We know that it's problematic. Many of our water systems, certainly in the big cities, are problematic. But we don't know in many of the small communities, because we don't have the resources, we haven't committed to find out and do the science behind the task here. This topic, in my opinion, Robert, is probably the as underserved topic that I can think of.
Yeah.
Because it affects so many people, and yet most people are naive or blind to the risks. This is absolutely a very, very important subject because it causes so many health problems.
Hey, Mike, listen, man, love everything you're saying. Really great information. Robert, quickly before we...
Yeah, Mike is absolutely right, and that's one of the reasons why we initiated our efforts back in 2015, because we knew that the information the public was getting was woefully inadequate. We knew that it is an underserved messaging. We knew that the people were not fully aware of this issue of water and the importance of water. And we knew that those pipes presented the biggest threat to human health in the history of our country. Like Paul said, during the days of Rome, 2,000 years ago, they already knew that this lead issue, distributing water with lead, was toxic and a danger to their civilization. And for this country, the most civilized, most wealthiest, most powerful country in the world, not to learn from that 2,000-year-old lesson is a travesty. And people like this guy running for Senate, who last week said that this is not a big issue. This is the problem that we face in America when we have knuckleheads like that.
Eric Hovde.
When we have when we have knuckleheads like that, using their bully pulpit to promote false, misleading, and inaccurate information.
So, Robert, let's talk about those seven suggestions of the EPA.
Sure. So the EPA has put out, and again, Paul has a we put together a letter to the EPA last year, and what we'll do is when you get a chance to go to the Campaign for Lead Free Water website, A copy of that letter will be on the website. You can look at that letter as well. But those seven issues that the EPA recommends is, first of all, they tell you have your water tested. They say learn if you have lead service lines. Look up to see if you have lead service lines in your house. They tell you to run your water. They tell you to learn about the construction of your neighborhood.
So, Robert, before you go any further, running the water. So that's
yeah, what we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that.
All right, go ahead.
We're going to talk about that one.
All right.
Use cold water, clean your aerator, and use your filter properly. Those are the seven recommendations of the EPA. We're going to take three of them today real quick
and
talk about those. Since Earl was very interested in the running of the water.
Tom Barrett used to always say, I run my water.
Exactly. And that was a big issue back then that Barrett was pushing when we first started. So this notion of running your water for like 3, 5, 7 minutes that they were recommending is not only for conservationists out there, the biggest headache and the most drastic example of waste of fresh water. But it's also a myth. It's kind of a myth. And Dr. Yana Lambrini-Du, who is also a member of the Campaign for Lead-Free Water, she has a very powerful article called The 10 Myths of Water Safety. And that could be found also. But she talks about a little bit about the running of water and the flushing and the myth of that. And basically what they're saying is that if you run the water for this long of a period, you should be able to remove most of the lead out of the water, which is false because the science does show that even though you run the water, and like I said, there's two forms of lead in the water that is poisoning and tainting the water. There's the particulate matter, that's what Earl was mentioning earlier regarding the flaking of lead chunks and tiny microscopic pieces you can't see that falls into the water. But there's also this like soluble lead. It's something like how sugar and water mix and then it gets invisible and it's in the water, but you don't see it. And that's also in the water as well. So when you're running the water, the whole idea was to remove that soluble lead in the water, because as the water is stagnant in the pipe for about 7, 8, 10 hours, whatever, like in the morning you go to work, you come home at night, you should be running the water because it's been stagnant during the whole day. Well, the problem is that as you're running the water, the science also shows that as you're running the water may be cleaning out the soluble lead, but it is also rushing through the pipe at a longer rate. And as they continue to rush the water through, the likelihood of flaking of particle matter into the water increases. And so you may be flushing out the soluble lead, but you're also increasing now the particulate lead matter falling into the water. Paul, you can add a little bit more if you want.
Yeah. So first, I want to thank both Mary and Mike for being on top of the
issue. Right.
And to say that we would love to recruit you to bring your knowledge and your capacity into our work and into your neighborhoods. And just say that this recommendation by EPA overlooks the complexities of flushing, as has been established in the scientific literature. And although flushing can indeed temporarily reduce or eliminate lead from water, the outcome's not guaranteed. And research has shown that under certain circumstances, flushing can in fact increase lead in water levels. And additionally, that the suggestion that water utilities possess scientifically reliable information about appropriate community-wide flushing times fails to address the challenge of the particularities at the household level, which is where we get our water from, because of household problems in plumbing materials and different plumbing arrangements. Water use practice, water age, water chemistry, and other factors which can give rise to markedly different lead release patterns in different buildings, even within the same community or the same block. And so there isn't really one sweeping recommendation that can be made And it's not an appropriate recommendation, especially since there are far more reliable measures for eliminating lead in water and preventing exposures like filtration, like bottled water usage or water distillation, as Mary talked about. And I think it's really understanding that prevention of the exposure through those methods is really more important than a faulty and flawed sort of overall out of their, you know, out of the back of their, just without any science telling you to flush the water, that'll solve the problem.
Right.
There's a lot more layers to the onion under this. And we'd be happy to sort of dive deep if people want to do that. But I just want to say that the most important thing to do is to eliminate the exposure through these technologies that are available.
So hold that thought. If you're just joining us, we're joined by Mr. Paul Swartz. He is a co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and Robert Miranda, and he's in Washington, D.C., and Robert Miranda here in Milwaukee with Flack Fresh Water for Life. We're going to continue to do this every Wednesday for however long it takes until people understand the inherent dangers of what we're talking about. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You know, and also at 855-75-CIVIC. I'm joined again by Paul Swartz. He is the co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water, and Robert Miranda. Get used to hearing those names and get used to Wednesday mornings at 8 o'clock. We're going to continue to do this until you get tired of it. But these guys have a lot of information that they're going to share. And, Paul, we're going to take you up on putting that on our website because it is critically important information. Robert, you wanted to talk about the other.
Yeah, we're going to let's touch a little bit about testing of the water. And like Paul says, you know, when we talk about these different recommendations from the EPA, These are onions that have a lot of layers on them. And so we're not going to be able to go in depth into them, but at least what we could do is... But at least we'll be able to establish a kind of foundation for people to understand some of these issues. And in the testing of water, one of the recommendations that the EPA puts out there is test your water. But what they don't tell you is that even though the recommendation that they have nowadays is if you have over 10 parts per billion of lead in your water, that is concerning. Well, the number that they put out there is not a number that's based on health. It's not a real health science kind of number. It's just a number somebody pulled out of their butt and threw it out in there. And it's not a real health-based issue. The testing also is, in most cases, not done properly. Some cities do first draw, some cities run. There's no real way of getting to how high the lead in the water is through water testing. And so some people just test their kitchen sink. When it's recommended that all taps in the house should be tested because lead is going through all different ways. And sometimes lead doesn't go through certain pipes. Sometimes it's when you're testing your water, it's like playing Russian roulette. You're you're going to be able to get a results that show or results that don't. And even if they don't, even if it's down to 2-3 parts per billion of lead in the water, the bottom line is it's still got lead in the water. And, you know, the CDC and EPA even say there should be no lead, zero tolerance, zero lead levels in the water. And the reason being is because if you're constantly drinking, even if it's 2 or 3 parts per billion of lead, drinking or cooking with it, and when you cook or boil lead, it becomes even more toxic. But when you're constantly ingesting it every day, that stuff builds up in your body. The lead builds up in your body. Lead doesn't leave your body. Lead builds up in your blood. It then hibernates and goes into bones and soft tissue. And then it stays in your body. And even if you break away from ingesting lead, your body still has that lead in it. And if your body stresses, like, for example, pregnant women, the pregnancies cause a stress, then lead goes back into your bloodstream. But testing water is a very complex kind of issue to just tell the public, test your water.
So
Paul can probably add on to that.
So, Paul, is that where they got the old saying, lead ass?
Well,
I'm sorry, man.
I want to go a little, I want to dive in, excuse the pun, and say that the recommendation for testing defies decades of scientific research that shows that there's inherent variability, meaning randomness, in lead release, and that there's an inability of standard water testing methods to capture reliably what are called worst case lead in water levels at any single tap. It's a recommendation that in fact can prolong rather than mitigate exposures to lead in water by giving water users the impression that their water is safe when in reality it exposes them to both low level chronic levels and or high level acute levels in lead water concentrations. And let me just quote one thing from a study by Sheldon Masters et al. In 2017. In cases of extreme lead in water variability, one would need to collect over 1,200 samples from a single tap to assess average lead in water concentrations at this tap within 20% of the true mean or average. And so I think that believing that any one or two or even three test sample, which is what most water utilities are going to ask you to do or do for compliance sampling, would let you know what's going on isn't real. And the thing is, you know, imagine Russian roulette. You've got a revolver, you've got 6 chambers, and you don't find a bullet in the first 5. That doesn't mean there's not a bullet in the last one.
Right.
And so especially for lead particles, for these little chunks of lead that can have upwards of hazardous waste levels of lead, those can be very easily missed by by testing regimes. And what's really important to know is that you can have zero or non-detector what's low level, and in the next hour or the next day or the next week, you can have in the tens or hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of parts per billion.
So we've come to the end for today. We will see you guys again next Wednesday. Robert Miranda and Paul Swartz, campaign for lead-free water. Up next, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action on The Earl Ingram Show.
All right.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.